I'm Bob Scowcroft. I'm the director of the Organic Farming Research Foundation, and this year my role at EcoFarm is to be the militant moderator of several panels. This is my last one, and then I get to be much more freestyle after that. I said this to the other one. Being an organizer and being on time, I arbitrarily announced that everyone that was here on time gets a free EcoFarm registration next year.
Yeah.
But don't tell Zia I said that. And I'm not on tape, so that's okay as well. But I really do think that time's important, and that both respecting the speakers and their time allotment, and particularly in the question and answer, I use it somewhat as militant moderator, but my basic feeling is that we're here for questions, maybe a brief comment, but really a question to the speakers, and that if you have a longer speech or issue you want to raise, that you should package it and submit it to the EcoFarm collective that makes the decisions for next year, and get your own panel and group to say that. A lot of that's happened, and it's worked, but it doesn't necessarily show respect to the other people in the audience if you have 5 minutes to bring something that you really want to bring up. Please honor that and bring it to the speakers afterwards when we break. Because I am the timekeeper, and I've been doing this long enough that I will interrupt and ask you what your question is. So, that stated, we have an excellent panel this morning. I don't know if this workshop, it's not. So you don't get DPR, CCA credit for this one. We're going to try to do about 20 minutes each speaker and leave at least 25 or 30 minutes for Q&A. A couple of times we've broken the panel a little bit early for those 5 or 6 people that really do want to share a 5 or 10 minute one-on-one exchange, so we might end it a little bit before 12, but the goal is to finish on time. The little bios are in here. I just don't like to take up time telling you about each speaker. They can tell you a little bit about themselves. I'd rather have the presentations begin. It'll be about 20 minutes each one, and we're here for building the regional fair trade organic movement. And I'm going to bring up Jerry McGeorge first from Organic Valley, then Michael Altenberg, and then close it with Jim Slama, and then we'll do Q&A to the group as a whole after that. So thank you very much for coming. You're up, number one.
Okay. Good morning. Glad to be here at EcoFarm. Not only because of all the great people here, but I called my wife last night, and back home in Wisconsin, it's about 10 below zero. So kind of nice being out here enjoying the weather a little bit. My name is Jerry McGeorge. I work for Organic Valley. We are located in Wisconsin, tiny little town. And I'm going to talk about our take on what it means to be regional and what fair trade means to our organization. But by way of starting, I'll give you a little bit of background on who Organic Valley is. And you know, I find in California, actually, we're not quite as well known as we are in some other areas. I'm sure some of you know who we are, but there's probably some folks that don't know. We're a cooperative. We're owned by our farmer members. And we have been in business now for about 15 years. We sell exclusively certified organic products, and we've got a really wide range of products. We sell dairy. We have organic eggs. We sell a wide variety of organic meats. We have produce on a fairly limited regional basis in the upper Midwest. And we also sell organic juices. Most of our business is dairy, so a lot of this talk that I will give today will concentrate on the dairy portion of our business. But as I said, I just want to bring up the wide range of things that we do offer. 15 years of business. Last year, 2002, in many ways was the most successful year we've ever had. Financially speaking, we look at about three things. We set a record for sales. We sold $125 million worth of product last year. We also had the most profitable year we ever had. And as I get into this conversation, the third piece, which is that what we were able to pay our farmers, is a real centerpiece of what I want to talk about today. And again, in 2002, we were able to pay our dairy farmers a higher price than we've ever paid them before. So on those, you know, those types of things, looking at it, it's been a successful year. 2003, I believe, will be very successful as well. We're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of $155 million in sales this year. So that's just a little background, who we are and what we do. What I've got up here is our Organic Valley label, and below it, the actual name of the organization, Crop Cooperative. Now, as we start to talk a little bit about regional and what that means to us, the crop portion of our name is an acronym, and it used to stand for what's down here, the Cooley Region Organic Produce Pool. Now, here's my little question, and if you're from, anybody's here from Wisconsin, you don't get to answer. Does anybody here know what a Cooley is? Okay. What's that?
It swims in a pool.
Doesn't swim in a pool. It in southwestern Wisconsin, where I'm from, there's little narrow valleys, and that's what a Cooley is, okay? And this is where we started, so that was part of our name in the beginning, the Cooley region, right? Now, and this is, and I've interspersed a few pictures of our farmers in here because I really think when we start talking about fair trade, one of the things we have to remember is it impacts the people. And the farmers are the people that we're impacting, and hopefully we're able to do something that would qualify for what we're calling fair trade here today. So these are some of our farmers up in the Northeast. But now, whoops, back to the name. We recently changed our name to more accurately reflect who we are these days, which is the Cooperative Regions of Organic Producer Pools. And again, as we get in, I'm going to show you how we have farmers now throughout the United States, and this is part of our regional approach. Now, this is the mission statement for our organization. I really want to draw your attention to the portion right here, up here in the middle, that says that we promote regional farm diversity and economic stability. That really, for me, is in the middle of our mission statement, and it gets to the heart of this regional fair trade type of approach. And there's a man, Jose Arizmendi, and if any of you are familiar with co-ops, you may know he was very instrumental in starting the Mondragon cooperative movement in Spain, and he had a quote that went something like this: the revolution will be moral for it to be relevant, but it must be economic for it to succeed. And that, to me, is kind of in that mission statement. That's what we're after. We want to create change, but we know we've got to be successful for it to go anywhere. Now, this chart right here, if you guys go away with one thing from my talk, I hope you remember this. And what this shows is the difference between what we're able to pay our dairy farmers, which is this top line here. I know there's a lot of numbers. And then the bottom line is the conventional pay price. As you can see, ours has been a slow but steady increase, whereas the conventional pay price has been up and down. Now, there's a couple of things there. Number one, conventional dairy farmers have to live with the fact that their price as a commodity rises and falls at the whim of the market. They don't have much to say about it. On the other hand, we take a very different approach. When we're talking to anybody that wants to purchase our product, we are very straightforward with them. We say, okay, this is the number we're paying our farmer, okay? And we build our cost structure off that number. That's the bottom line. That's where it starts. And if you think we're too expensive, we're showing you this is what it costs our dairy farmers to not get rich, but to be successful, to have a way of life with their farming that they can continue on and you know, make a decent living for their family. Whereas so many of the people down here caught in this conventional world, you know, they're going out of, Wisconsin is losing 3 dairy farms a day to bankruptcy, okay? That is the absolute demise of family farmers in our state, and I know it's throughout the country these kinds of things are happening. So this, to me, is really our success story, that we're able to do this, that we're able to say, okay, our farm gate price is this level, and you, if you retailers, you distributors, we're going to show you how we got to this number, and hopefully then you'll understand it, and you'll say, okay, well, we'll go ahead, and we'll buy from you, understanding what we're doing for those farmers, the actual farmers for our organization. Now, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. That was sort of my fair trade, the centerpiece of fair trade for me with Organic Valley, the idea that our farmers are really driving our price. And, you know, they negotiate with the people that run the business every year to set that price. We go to them, what is it going to take this year? Now, as I said, switching gears a little bit into some of the regional portion of it, this gives you an idea of where our farmers are located, and it does then talk to our strategy, our regional strategies. And I'm going to talk about three different things with regional. Number one, this, where our producers are actually at. Number two, how does this regional approach sort of drive some of our marketing? And then thirdly, processing, and that kind of goes hand in hand with the producer base. But as you see, strong concentration in the upper Midwest. This is where we started. It's still the home to the bulk of our farmers. However, as demand for our product grew, and as there were more organic dairy farmers that were interested perhaps in joining with us, or even going through the process of getting certified organic just so they could come on with us, because we show that chart I showed on the prices, we show that to prospective farmers, and it makes their eyes open up. You know, it's very different from what they've been used to. But so let's take the Northwest as an example. It was really our first area outside of the Midwest that we were able to bring on farmers. And when the demand was there and we had the farmer group there, we were able to bring them into our organization. And of course now you've got the efficiencies of that regional area where we're supplying milk and our dairy products out of the Northwest to begin with, you know, the Seattle markets, Portland markets, into California, that kind of thing. Then we were, beyond that, able to expand into the Northeast and kind of replicate that. Okay, and now we have established pools on each coast in the Midwest, and what really works for us is those producers on the coasts are supplying the fluid milk products for those areas, those highly populated areas. Our Midwest base of farmers is supplying the fluid milk needs for the Midwest, but the Midwest has far fewer people than either of the coasts. So the other thing, almost all of our cheese production takes place with our Midwest farmers. And if, you know, one of the things that I struggle with when we talk about regional is, what does it mean if you're shipping, you know, a product from Florida up to Washington? Is that really a regional thing? One of the things that does work for us, though, with those Midwest farmers is you take that cheese and it takes gallons and gallons of milk to create, you know, a pound of cheese. So in a sense, you're condensing that product. And so our strategy has been to take the condensed cheese type products and move those out to the coasts. And again, it's a supply game. Once the demand is there, we start moving into producing some of the other products like the cheeses and the butters on the coast. And indeed, at this point, we're now beginning to produce both cheese and butter in the Northwest. So that's a little bit of where our producers are. I just like this picture. This is one of our farms. And see, I think that's Mount Rainier. This is just real quick to give you an idea that the number of farmers that we have. 543, that's a little high because it has a crossover. We've got several farmers that maybe are dairy producers, but they're also producing beef or vegetables or something like that for us. So, but it's around 500 farmers, and it's more like 14, not 19 states. And we have a wide variety of farmers. I just, again, put this one in there. We have Amish farmers both in Pennsylvania and in the Midwest. This speaks to, I think, again, the success that we have had, and this, you know, gives you an idea of how many dairy farmers actually are part of our organization. And really, to me, one of the more impressive things, I mean, this whole graph is impressive, but look at 2001 to 2002. Last year, we added over 100 dairy farmers. And again, you know, if I think about working at Crop, one of the things I'm proudest of is the fact that we're able to do that, because as I said, I'll go back to the fact of three dairy farm a day in Wisconsin going out of business. And this represents a real chance for these folks to continue doing what they've been doing. Now, this, I love this picture. These are all farmers, and this image has been used extensively in our marketing and advertising. We do very little advertising. We can't afford it, but we use our farmers in our marketing. And you know, these are three folks from the Midwest, and this starts to get into our regional marketing strategies. I was at a conference a couple of years ago, and I remember talking to a couple of managers of natural food stores out in on the Northeast around Boston area, and I started talking to them about who we were. They hadn't heard of us, or in a couple of cases they had. They said, oh, well, we don't buy your milk. It's not regional. And I said, well, you know, do you know that we have farmers in Vermont and in Maine and down in New York and Pennsylvania? And they didn't know that. And all they were relying on was what the carton said was distributed by Crop Cooperative Lafarge, Wisconsin. So we realized that we really had to start to push this regional. I mean, it's the reality for us, but we got to make sure that message gets out to people, because as consumers, we often find that part of their decision-making process is it a regional product? Okay, so now, this gives you an idea in New England. We've come out with a whole line of cartons that tout the fact that, yes, indeed, this is milk produced in your backyard. This is what the front looks like, and the side panel has a description of one of the farmers out there, okay? It talks a little bit about their family farm and what's happening there. And so then this is something that we've done really throughout the country. You see, we've got a California pastures. We've got the Northeast that we just saw in the Northwest. This one over here, the Midwest, we've just kept that one the way it is. Now, I did notice yesterday when I was eating that actually the cartons of our milk on the tables were Northwest, not California. So I'm not sure why that was. But, you know, when we made that decision, we knew actually that occasionally things would happen like that. And so we live with it. But the general thing here is, let's make sure the consumers understand that, you know, if you're buying milk here, it's probably coming from our farmers in the Central Valley, you know, or if you're up in Portland, it's from Oregon farmers, that kind of thing. So, you know, our marketing really takes this seriously. We have to make sure the consumers understand that this is important to us, and we understand that it's important to the consumers as well. Now, I'm not going to spend very much time on this, but I just want to give you an idea. Again, regionalization of our production facilities. We have made a decision not to get into owning a lot of processing plants. We go out and contract with co-processors. And so all over the country, and you know, kind of go back to that producer map I had up there, you can see we got the Northwest, the upper Midwest, and then out east, generally speaking. Again, just a picture of one of our beautiful farms out in the Midwest. Now, I put this up here, I was thinking about this, and you know, it's kind of maybe a tired old phrase. We've seen it on bumper stickers, overused to some degree, but I really think there's a lot of truth in it. And I really think that for our organization, it is something that we aspire to. What are we doing on a global level, but we have to bring it back down to the local, the regional level to really affect any kind of change, which, you know, we want to sell our product, but we're also about creating change in the agricultural system in this country. So that, in a nutshell, is a look at some of what fair trade and regional means to Organic Valley. So turn it over to you, Michael.
I think I'm just going to remain seated. I don't have any kind of a presentation on the screen. My name is Michael Altenberg. I'm the chef and owner of a small restaurant group in Evanston, Illinois, in Chicago. I have a fine dining restaurant that has been solely organic for 7 years, and we've now grown. And we've now grown. A trattoria that's also organic, and a French bistro, which is in the city. And I don't know if anyone knows Chicago, but it's on Lincoln Avenue, and that is also organic. And we're in the process of expanding that concept, possibly within the next 2 years, to having 8 bistros that will all be solely organic. We're also going through kind of an interesting process of trying to get certified as an organic restaurant or an organic restaurant group. I just thought, for one, I'd give you a little bit of an introduction of what brought us to becoming an organic restaurant. I have three children. My oldest child at age 2 was diagnosed with leukemia, so it was kind of a reality sandwich, as you might say, that something, there was no history of cancer in my family. It's definitely, the kind of leukemia he has is acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which he doesn't have, he's in remission, but it's supposedly environmentally related. And as someone who's been in the restaurant business at that point for about 18 years, it kind of just brought it into my face that I needed to start using product that was clean, just considering the fact that I live in an area which is very family-oriented, and I've got a lot of people bringing young children in and people that are nursing and people that are immune-suppressed, that I just really needed to focus on that aspect of what I wanted to do with my life and my business. So it's kind of evolved over 7 years. What's interesting is being in the Midwest, people have kind of this idea that the Midwest is devoid of, you know, progressive thought. Well, he obviously showed you that it's not. But it's been interesting for me as a chef to kind of establish chef and farmer relationships. And that's taken quite some time, and now I feel like we have a very strong relationship with local farms. In fact, if you were at the discussion earlier, Linda and Richard from Harmony Valley, I actually buy a lot of product from them. I use Rink DeVee, who has a company called Homegrown Wisconsin, and it's actually a large cooperative, and they actually do 2-time-a-week delivery, which is interesting. Usually restaurants are subjected to buying once a week, which is very hard and makes it difficult for a lot of restaurateurs to use organic product because you're limited in space if you're a small restaurant and you've got to somehow span the whole week with what you're getting as a delivery from several small farms. And with fresh produce, that makes it difficult. We use several small growers. One of the more exciting things that's just happened for our restaurant group is we're using third-party certified grower of beef, Joel Rissman, Rissman Organics. He also raises rabbits and squab for us. But we get a whole steer every week, about 975 pounds hanging weight. I never really started to think about beef the way that I do now until Joel Rissman really brought it into focus for me. I didn't realize as a chef that out of a 975-pound steer, which is actually a larger steer, this is the hanging weight of the steer after it's been slaughtered and broken down, that only roughly 100 to 120 pounds of the animal would be primal cuts, meaning that you'd get your tenderloin, your T-bone, all the steaks that when people go out to eat, they're looking for those primal cuts of beef. It's a small amount on a whole animal. My business partner's ready to kill me. We have probably about 1,500 pounds of ground beef that's accumulating in our freezers, and we're actually working with someone possibly to get some subsidy from, you know, to be able to sell this beef locally. I try to approach local restaurateurs, and when I tell them that ground beef, I can sell it to them for $3.20 a pound, they look at me and say they can buy, you know, IBP packing beef at, you know, $1.20. One guy told me he's getting it for 75 cents a pound. So it makes it real difficult to try to unload that beef, and possibly when we get larger, maybe we'll be able to use a lot of more of it internally. You can just sell so many burgers and so much beef bourguignon and whatever. But
did you hear about the $41 burger up in New York?
Yeah, I did hear about that. Stuffing it with a little foie gras, that's a bad word at a conference like this, and braised short ribs. That goes just so far too. You can sell so many burgers. So we're actually unloading a lot of it. Part of what's interesting that I wanted to relate to the beef that we're selling, we use a farm called Prairie Crossing, which is a community that's in Grays Lake, and it's a real progressive community. They try to supply everyone in the community with eggs and fresh produce during the in-season, and I've been buying, they've put some greenhouses in place, and they're doing certified organic, you know, greenhouse. I'm buying arugula and, you know, little gem lettuces, you know, little artisanally grown, you know, lettuces. And they've been taking a lot of my beef in return for the people in the community. So I've been unloading about, you know, 200 to 300 pounds of beef a week, which has been very helpful. I also wanted to talk about our relationship with larger companies. We actually, I'm not here because of that, but we buy from Organic Valley all our cream, all our butter, our eggs in the off season pretty much come from them, you know, all our dairy in general. And I've looked into buying beef, but now I've got my beef relationship set up. But a big problem for us, we've been using larger companies to supply us, and we're the only restaurant in the city that's buying from Goodness Greenness, which is a large distributor of organic product. And it's really hard for us because for each restaurant, they make us buy 35 cases of product for every drop-off, because they have these large semis that come, and they figure for one stop, they need to make it worth their while to stop the truck, open the doors, and drop product off. But that's been very difficult for us. And part of why I think it's important, Jim, who's going to get up next and talk about, you know, local distribution of product, we really need and don't have right now someone in place in the Chicagoland area that's kind of a middle person. They're only large distributors. We need someone that will be able to break cases down. For instance, I'm having to buy, you know, 40-pound cases of peppers that, you know, I mean, it's not even that I won't use that amount of peppers during a week. It's just the space available to start to house this stuff. So it'll be very helpful if something like what Jim is going to get up and talk about, you know, if that system gets put in place, because it'll help small restaurateurs like myself start using more and more organic product. Another issue that I just wanted to talk about, and I didn't want to get on it kind of a negative kind of a role, but a lot of people, especially in the Midwest, are saying that they're using organic product in their restaurant, and I don't know if you've looked in the news lately, but organics is a great way to get your name in Gourmet Magazine or Chef Magazine or any kind of a national publication by saying that you use an organic product. What I'd like to see happen, I think, is for some kind of a governing organization to make sure that restaurateurs who say that they're using organic product or that they're trying to focus on organics are truly doing that. Because I think it's really easy to say you're doing something, and unless there's someone to, I hate to use the word police, but to police you and make sure that you really are truly using organics, that there are a lot of people out there, and I know because, I mean, as far as I know, in the off season and the non-growing season, Goodness Greenness, which is the distributor for organics in the Chicagoland area, we're right now the only restaurant account. So I've just put to mind the other 20 or so restaurants in the city that I won't focus on any names that are supposedly on the organic bandwagon and part of Chef's Collaborative and, you know, are flying this organic flag. I just want to know, I mean, where they're getting their product from and if they could share it with me, because I'd like to be using the same sources if they have some interesting sources. But it's hard for me to believe that products that we use for things like, I call it mirepoix, which is, you know, the basis for making stocks and sauces in restaurants, celery, carrots, and onions, that the people are really flying those products in from California or Guatemala or wherever in the off season, those organic products. So in a nutshell, I think I'm under 20 minutes here, but I just think that it's so important to start focusing on buying locally. The biggest thing I see right now, it's really accessible. The products that are accessible for me that are organic, for instance, through Goodness Greenness at this time of year, I'm able to buy apples from Guatemala, apples from California, but I can't find apples from Illinois. And I personally have relationships with people that have the best apples in the country that are 5 miles from where my restaurant is. I have a hard time getting their apples, but it's easier for me to get apples flown in from California. So I think that we live in this kind of a confused system where we're flying product in when we have the product already there locally, and we need to set up some kind of a system of distribution so people can buy what we have just locally within our literally arm's reach. But so I think it's important to support this whole local organic initiative that Jim will talk about next. So anyway, that's about it. Oh, there we go.
I see all these people in the back, and hopefully I can even take a look at your face. Really exciting to be here, particularly on such a panel. I'm such an Organic Valley fan, and Jerry didn't really get into their story, but 15 years ago, seven farmers got together and said, you know, we got to start selling organic produce, and failed miserably, and said, well, this isn't working so well, do you think maybe we ought to do dairy, and didn't fail. In fact, they now are the biggest provider of cooperative of dairy in the world, I believe, and I'm really proud of the fact that the Midwest has produced such an amazing company, and Jerry works closely with George Seaman, their CEO, who's a good friend, and really just a company that makes me feel good about the organic movement. And, with Michael, all I have to say is that traveling with a chef of Michael's caliber is really nice because he makes all the restaurant reservations, and, you know, and then they treat you like a king, so, you know, it's just really good. So if you can find restaurant-owning friends, you know, milk it for all you can get. Good. And, you know, and then there's Bob Scowcroft. I've got a little story to tell about him, too. No, come on, I'm getting this one on tape, too, because everybody needs to know this one. I was at Farm Aid last year in October, and Bob was part of the press conference before, and it was an amazing press conference. We got Neil Young talking, go out and buy organic, and, you know, Willie Nelson talking about the horrors of the Farm Bill, and then, you know, John Mellencamp talking, you know, about everything, and then Bob, you know, got up and talked about organic and the organic standards and the opportunity, and we need to support small farmers. And so, you know, he sat down, and Neil Young jumps up and gives him a standing ovation, and the whole place gives Bob Scowcroft a standing ovation. I got to tell you, I was like, you deserve it, Bob. That was just really wonderful. So anyway, Bob's been doing this for a long time. He's been at every one of these conferences from what I know. How many years? 21 years, so bravo. And for me, I'm,
time's up,
all right. I take back that compliment. Yes. Move this up. Okay. How's that? A little lower. Okay. I'm speaking too loud. Is that better? Okay. I just want to, you know, briefly tell you a little bit about me. For the last 15 years, I've been publishing a magazine called Conscious Choice in Chicago, which focuses a lot on, you know, the kind of things that we believe in, natural and organic food, sustainability, local food, local businesses, natural health. And it's real exciting. In the last year, we just created a new company called Dragonfly Media, which is actually creating a chain of Conscious Choice type publications. But, you know, unlike other chains, they're going to be local. You know, most of journalism is going to be focused on what's going on in your community, written by local writers. And we currently have bought publications in Los Angeles, Seattle, Vancouver. We're looking at San Francisco very hard. And then 2004, 2005, we're going to do the East Coast, which is really, really exciting. Pardon me? I don't think we're quite at that level, but someday. You know, honestly, to me, the media is so atrocious and so clueless about what's really going on, what's important out there to us, that I think Conscious Choice and Dragonfly, what we're doing, could help bring the kind of information that's really revolutionary. In my opinion, we need a revolution because we're definitely going in the wrong direction, and the media is a big part of the problem. So if you're interested, you'd see it on the web, consciouschoice.com. The other part of my world is a company called Sustain, which 6 years ago we created basically to do environmental communications. That's how we started. A friend of mine who worked in the advertising industry with Leo Burnett, a very large ad agency, he was kind of fed up with it, and I was fed up with it. We did a whole campaign around an incinerator in Chicago that was putting out 150,000 pounds of lead, and in a city where one in four kids had lead poisoning. And we did some ads and some other public events. We ended up shutting this incinerator down, which is really great, working with grassroots groups. And thank you. And so as a result of this, I said, you know, we need a company that, like, does this regularly. So I raised some money, and Sustain started, and I'm just going to show you two of my favorite images. This is one, the Fishberry, which many of you maybe have seen regarding genetic engineering. These posters are like everywhere, and they're still everywhere. We produced them a couple of years ago, working with the Center for Food Safety and some others. And then we also did, we work with Catherine DiMatteo and the Organic Trade Association on the Keep Organic Organic campaign. You know, Bob played a key role, and you know, there's a lot of groups who did a very good job on that. But the image we create on that in this campaign, I'm really proud of. Don't let this be the future of organic foods, where we've got a USDA certified apple with a genetic engineering sticker, a toxic sludge sticker, and an irradiated sticker. And this became really one of the defining images of that whole campaign. And so, just to give you a little sense of what Sustain does. And this campaign also really got me into organic. I mean, I was into it before, but I really got into it and recognized that this could be the future of food and should be the future of food, and really not the corporate organic that unfortunately we're going towards, but family farmer organic and supporting people like Michael who really care about organic for the right reasons. So in the last year or so, I created something called the Local Organic Initiative in Chicago, where we've worked with a lot of leaders in the community and asked them, hey, what's going on? How can we start growing a lot more food locally and selling it? And doing the right kind of farms. And so out of this, we created a strategic plan, you know, kind of like, if we had $20 million, what would we do? And we don't have $20 million, so we're starting to focus a little bit more. But one of the things we created was this, which is a document, the Land of Organic Opportunity, Steps to Building a Regional Organic Food System in Chicago. And so this thing kind of spells out our philosophy, you know, where we think it needs to go, the opportunities, the benefits. And interestingly enough, Chicago's like so ripe for this. I feel so blessed. Part of it is because Mayor Daley, and you know, some of you know Mayor Daley from, you know, his father, the Democratic Convention in 1968. Well, this guy's different. He like is wants, he's professed publicly, he wants Chicago to be the greenest city in America. And yeah, it's hard to believe. And he hired Bill McDonough, and some of you might know Bill McDonough. You know, he's been profiled twice in Time Magazine. You know, he's working with Ford to create a auto plant that's like the pinnacle of industrial design for closed loop, kind of no pollution, those kind of things. And McDonough wrote a story in Conscious Choice in response to a cover story that I did talking about Mayor Daley and Mayor Daley hiring him. And so McDonough said this about creating a regional food system. He says, supporting a regional organic food system is one of the most important places to start. In this new model, Chicago's markets could support the rebirth of the American prairie. Organic farming works with natural cycles of water and natural flow of nutrients. It heals the soil and the watershed, a dire need in a region in which conventional farming has exhausted the earth. As Chicago markets for organic food grow, the city would become an ever stronger catalyst for the restoration of economic, social, and environmental health in the rural Midwest, not to mention the health of Chicago's citizens. Man, like Bill McDonough's talking that, you know, and then later he was quoted in the Chicago Tribune, essentially along the same lines, talking about the importance of organic. And then we just had a gubernatorial election where the new governor was, you know, I interviewed him before the election, and in this interview he said, I want to support organic food. This is an important part of what, you know, how we can rebuild the rural economy in Illinois. And his top advisor, a guy named David Wilhelm, said this in the same report. He said, local organic production will be a boon to the Illinois economy, both in Chicago and downstate. Policymakers should pay attention to the potential for local economic development and job creation in this area. The impact it will have on the farming, processing, and agricultural service sectors may create a tremendous economic multiplier effect benefiting the entire region. Economics. I mean, this is about dollars. And Daley recognizes it. The new governor recognizes it. David recognizes it. And, you know, fortunately, they're kind of looking to me and some of the stuff that our partners are doing for advice. I was on the transition team, you know, for the new governor. I'm helping get some people actually in the Department of Agriculture working there, including, I hope, Julie Brussel, who's on Bob's board. And they're really excited about the opportunities here. And I think part of what they see is that the ag community in the Midwest has just been devastated. the whole commodification of farming basically has left rural communities dry. Its prices have continued to go on down for crops. It's basically genetically engineered corn, genetically engineered soybeans. Prices have plummeted in part because Europe and Japan doesn't want these things anymore. So, you know, our farmers are basically screwed. There's very little meat production in the state anymore, even though, you know, we used to be the meat, you know, Chicago's stockyards. You know, we used to supply meat for much of the nation. That's all gone to, you know, non-union places where they can pay a little bit less in wages and, you know, basically screw everybody. And so it's true. You know, so they're seeing, hey, maybe with organic, there's price premiums, there's lots of benefits, you know, across really from preserving open space to the environment to lots of other things. So these policymakers are recognizing, hey, you know, let's do something with this. So in this report, we also did publicize a study that was done that looked at the market for organic produce in Chicago. And what the study said is that right now there's $60 to $80 million a year of organic produce being sold in Chicago, and only 3% of it is grown locally. So what about the other $77 million? And produce is only 21% of people's food dollars. So when you do the math, it's just huge numbers. And so fortunately, we've got an administration that likes this. And also in Wisconsin, there's a new Democratic governor who's open to organic. Michigan, new Democratic governor is open to organic. Indiana, I'm not so sure about. But, you know, the bottom line is there's opportunities. And in fact, the old governor in Illinois, you may have heard about him, he just gave clemency to everybody on death row, which is very, very bold move. 2 weeks before that, his administration gave Sustain a grant to do a feasibility study looking at what do we need for distribution. And because the problem, as Michael says, you know, he wants organic food year-round, and it's hard to get. You know, I think Goodness Greenness has been doing, you know, Julie's here from Goodness Greenness, and Bob Skaman has been on my board for years. They've been doing a very admirable job focusing on bringing primarily produce in from California to supply larger customers, Dominick's, Jewel's, you know, the big supermarkets, Whole Foods buys from them, lots of other accounts. But it's tough for them to focus on small, and it's also been really tough for them to focus on local. Bob's tried. You know, Bob's been on my board. And basically, because there's so little infrastructure and there's so few farmers that can really produce at the quantity that he needs to do pallets. That's what his business is about. It's doing pallets. He's lost money, and they've lost money when they've tried to do this kind of stuff. And what he says is the only way it's going to work is if it's subsidized. If the state, if foundations, you know, federal government, whoever, you know, helps to support programs to make this work. And he's happy to help. And in fact, he's, you know, part of my team who's now working on this local organic project. So now I'm going to talk a little bit more about the project and what we found and what we're focusing on. You know, basically there's two keys up front. First is distribution, and the second is farmer development. And I'll talk about distribution first. So we've gotten some money from the state and also the Chicago Community Trust, believe it or not, very conservative local foundations giving us money to work on organic food. And they're giving us money to actually assess what do we need to create a regional distribution system? And what kind of warehouses do we need? What kind of trucking? You know, what kind of supply chain management? You know, all these kind of things. And so, you know, we're working with Bob. We're actually working with John Deere has a whole new division that's geared up towards organic and supply chain management.